application for May 3rd, 2017. Okay, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 4. Senator Courtney. Welcome. I know. It gets harder every year.
You mean moving? You just
moving.
I see. That makes me feel really good. Come before the Senate Education Committee and they talk about my body.
Not all of us.
But we're talking about PE today, so. Yeah.
So I start now?
Yes, you may, sir, anytime
okay,
you'd like.
So my name is Peter Courtney, and I'm a state senator, which is District 8, which includes portions of Salem, Jervis, and Woodburn. And Chair Daugherty, Vice Chair Hernandez, Vice Chair Wilson, members of the August House Committee of Education, I've come here today to testify in support of what we call Senate Bill 4, which originated in the Oregon State Senate. It was worked, assigned, publicly heard, vetted, and worked in the Senate Education Committee. It then proceeded to the floor of the Senate. I carried the bill, and then we proceeded to adopt the measure and to move it to the House of Representatives of the State of Oregon, where it is today in the Committee on Education. My testimony, I always like to have written testimony when I appear before a committee, because I think it's out of respect for the committee and the process. So I will speak to the words, although I will go off script here and there. This is known as the PE Bill, which stands for Physical Education. And physical education is important to our children. It keeps them healthy, keeps them happy, and it keeps them engaged. Physical education helps children maintain a healthy weight, and it builds strong bones. It reduces the risk of obesity and related conditions such as diabetes, heart disease. It has even been shown to reduce anxiety, depression, leading to what we call better mental health. Studies show that regular PE at school benefits children's academic performance. Kids who are active have higher test scores and grades. They pay better attention to their academic assignments. They have better memory. They have better recall. And active children are even less likely to act out in school. This is why it is so important that we ensure that physical education is being taught in our classroom as well as in the gymnasiums and fields, parking lots surrounding among the schools themselves, which is why 10 years ago, this is where this testimony becomes difficult for me and this bill becomes difficult for me. A decade ago, the legislature passed Senate Bill 3141, and I had worked very hard on that bill. This established PE minutes requirements for grades K through 8, a minute requirement. At least 150 minutes for elementary schools and 225 minutes for middle schools. Now, those minutes were dissected and detailed to deal with physical activity, but also classroom instructions about healthy living, how you eat and sleep and things like that. So those minutes included physical activity as well as, shall we say, instructional activities. We gave school districts 10 years to implement this requirement. They go into effect in July of this month, this year, just a few weeks from now. And according to our recent review, only 10% of Oregon schools are currently meeting these requirements. So basically, in 10 years, the many school districts in the state have decided not to do this and not to meet these requirements. We're now full months away from the implementation date, or there is trouble. While I am disappointed, and that is an understatement, in these numbers, I also realize that we would be hurting our schools if we let these requirements go into effect in July. Because technically, if you did, You could deny funding to school districts. You could really come down very hard, and or parents could file a major lawsuit based on this bill and really cause trouble. That is not a melodramatic statement. Instead, PE advocates in the schools have been working hard to come up with a solution. 8, 9, 10 months ago at my office, and I wish I had it in front of me. I don't know where that is. Oh, I do have it. Well, this is not comprehensive. You have your education community, but you also have the Oregon Health Science University, Nike, the Heart Association, among others, got together and tirelessly worked for months. It didn't start out very good. It started out with some real blame, pointing fingers, etc. But they got together, and they knew what they had to do, what you have to do, because the only thing wrong with kids are adults, I say, and so they decided to step up and come up with the following. And that is what they've come up with, is this bill. And what this bill does, and now I'm going to speak before you, and I hope I get this right. There's going to be a two-year school year period, 2018 through 2019, the minutes have been suspended. Now, I don't like this pause button. You know, we use optics and channeling. We're supposed to say you push the pause button. Well, I don't like that. That's contemporary language. All I'm going to tell you is the minutes for both elementary and middle schools will be suspended for 2 years. Basically, the law will be suspended. But in 2019 to 2020, elementary schools have got to go with 120 of the minutes. And as you know, that's 80% of the requirement. I believe that was the 180-minute requirement. And so they have got to at least get 100. They got 2 years to figure out how they're going to at least do 120 out of the 180. And then 2019-2020, 2020-2001, elementary schools the next year have to basically be at full go. Middle schools are required to have 180 minutes 2021-2022, so they actually get 3 years. And then from the next year, school year, 2022-23, and I know this is confusing, they got to be at full year. So basically what you're doing, 2 years, you got to sit down, Department of Ed, figure out how you're going to do this, and then the elementary schools will start that very next academic year, calendar year, or, you know, the academic year, the way it is. And you got to come up with 80% of the minutes, and the following year you got to fully implement it. Whereas the middle schools, they got the bigger load. They will have another year, and then they got to start 80% and up. So that's what the bill does. I support the bill. It is a bittersweet thing for me. I almost didn't agree to the amendments. I almost walked away from it until my staff informed me I would accept the amendments. Inform me I would testify and support the bill, which is a story of my life. And so I came before the Senate Education Committee and I supported the amendments, and I support this bill. And I ask that you seriously consider it and through your individual and collective wisdom, and I ask you, beg you, to support the bill. Hopefully you can agree with it. So that's the bill. That's what the history is.
Thank you. I know Representative Solomon is going to testify. Do we need to ask you questions now? Do you have to go someplace, Senator? Or
I'm not going anyplace, but okay. No, the committee, the House really is not fond of me, so I'll leave if you want me to. Otherwise,
no, no. I just had some questions, but I was going to wait until Representative Solomon testified.
I'm not going
to. We would love to have you stay here.
And you notice where I always sit on the side. I never sit in the middle seat. I know my place. Wingman, not the main person.
Good. Wingman, just Representative Solomon.
My testimony also is the oldest, right? It's been submitted. So I thought, yeah, okay.
You good? Good.
Hey,
good. How are you?
Thank you.
Chair Dorr.
Why is he taking pictures? Is it you and me taking pictures?
It could be both of us.
Okay,
just say cheese. Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Wilson, Vice Chair Hernandez, members of the Education Committee. For the record, my name is Janine Solomon. I'm a state representative for House District 30. I first want to thank Senate President Peter Courtney on his long history of work on this issue. Physical education is one of the most crucial aspects of a student's education experience and overall well-being. It is proven that physical movement can help students in their learning process. It reduces anxiety, helps students in their learning, it reduces anxiety and depression, as well as it helps maintain a healthy weight, strong bone structure, and can improve core strength. If you want students to be engaged and focused in a classroom, you must allow time for the brain to take a break and get kids moving. We are here before you today because 10 years ago, House Bill 3141 was passed, and yet only 10% of Oregon schools are meeting the new requirements of the bill at this time. After years of budget deficits, schools are having a difficult time implementing the increased minute requirements due to cut staff, reduced days, and the need for building expansions that because of space issues most districts are facing, known as gym cafetoriums. The same space is used for gym, as well as having lunch, as well as having music classes. So I want to again thank the Senate President's Office, the PE advocates, and school groups for their hard work on Senate Bill 4. It is a solid compromise and comes here after 9 months of hard work. I am certain that the process was not an easy one, as everyone involved knew the positive value that physical education plays in a student's life. In these very difficult times for school funding, it is the right thing to do. There are so many benefits to the work that is being proposed in this bill. The bill allows for a 6-year phase-in period so that schools can have additional time to prepare to implement, giving them 2 additional years to plan, then 4 additional roll-up years to follow for both elementary and middle school implementation. I believe the flexibility given to the elementary schools, whose teachers are also endorsed to teach PE, will help meet the requirements and let teachers incorporate brain breaks into their teaching. Kids can get their bodies moving while engaging their minds. It is very important. While this allows flexibility, it will also save time and money by not carving out or adding time to each school day for additional PE time. I know that in the Hillsborough School District, where I'm also a school board member, 8 of our schools share gym space, and they were facing an additional $23 million for implementation, which included building upgrades as well as FTE. I am excited to see Senate Bill 4 move forward, and I hope that we can take these next 2 years to work together and find a solution to get our middle school program up and moving. We have much work ahead of us, but I am committed to help in any way that I can. And with the current budget we are facing, it is tough to ask our school districts to spend millions of additional funds to meet these requirements. Senate Bill 4 is the right move to make, and I hope that you will join me in to support this important legislation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? Okay, I have a few. In the discussions here, was there any discussion about what requirements currently for elementary and middle school teachers will be taken away, academic requirements to be able to fit this time in? And the reason I'm saying that is that there's so many more things that have been added to the school day, to curriculums, to things that they have to teach, things that they have to do. And I was just wondering whether some of these things are going to be taken away to give the time for PE.
Chair Doherty, I'd like my staff, Lisa Herzog, to comment. She was involved in the work group and was the history. So could if Lisa Herzog, my staff, could answer the question, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Chair Doherty. My name is Lisa Herzog. I'm from Senator Courtney's staff. And to answer that question, that was definitely a consideration. And, you know, it's been a almost 10-month work group process. And, of course, one of the school advocates' main concerns was that it was going to cost a lot of money to bring on new PE teachers. I think that a big part of this bill, and Morgan Allen might be able to give more information about this, is about if you know, teachers do kind of co-teaching. Like if there's 2 first grade teachers, sometimes one class will come over and they'll do kind of co-teaching while the other one does lesson planning. Mm-hmm. We included that in this bill so that we can do that for PE time, so a teacher can take on another class, and so hopefully it won't be removing time from a teacher's day. It'll be just be kind of reallocating the time. But yeah, I think Morgan Allen, if he's
He's going to come up later to testify. So on this, so a teacher could have 70 kids in PE if they combine classes.
I suppose so if the two classes were 35 kids. Although right now, if the bill, if the this bill weren't to pass and the current rules were to go into effect in July, we could have what we called in the work group the Thunderdome situation, in which case you could have, you know, 150, 200 kids just playing dodgeball with each other and one PE teacher. So, yeah, it definitely has been considered, and it's something we're concerned
about. And
then
also, in the bill, was there a consideration for school districts that have four-day weeks?
Yeah, in fact, that's actually a chart. This is actually how the bill kind of started originally, was we were just looking at how to make it so that shortened weeks and weeks with holidays would be accommodated, and it kind of grew from there and became a whole new system to kind of make this implementation process smoother.
Thank you very much.
Chair Doherty, it was my understanding, too, that a lot of the elementary side of things is that the teachers also have that endorsement, but they were also looking at possibly doing some movement within their classroom just for their students that could add to just to the time. It could be taking the students out to walk around a track.
That was my next question, was does it have to be the X amount of PE or can
so
be
it doesn't,
movement during the
it's
day?
It's my understanding that it doesn't physically have to be, take place in the gym, that the teacher has to then say, everybody's playing dodgeball. So I think there, I was recently visiting Free Orchards Elementary, and one of the teachers took a brain break, and she had a whole dance movement to songs that they were learning about, and it was animal anatomy of some sort. And so they did this whole dance movement. So I it was my understanding that would be considered a brain break because it was getting the kids up and moving, and they were really.
But I would hope so, because in European schools, that's what PE, a lot of the PE is movement during the day. Because it's better for brain development and that kind of thing. So.
Yes.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much for bringing this to us, and thanks for working on this bill for so long. Okay, next we have Morgan Allen and Christina Bogomer. Thank you, Senator. Oh. And Lori Wimmer, who we now have you on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Morgan Allen from the Confederation of Board Administrators, here to apparently answer many questions. But I did submit some written testimony that I will summarize, and I think will address some of the questions that were discussed earlier. As was mentioned, this was the result of a 9-plus-month process where all the school advocates and Senator Courtney and his office and school folks sat down. And I think the bill reflects a compromise that both recognizes the fiscal challenges that our school districts are facing and the importance of physical education. I think that's something really important to get on the record. There was no disagreement amongst all of the people at the table about the value of physical education or movement and how that improves student outcomes. And I think that was a very important thing that helped us move the conversation forward. And if we all agree that it's a good thing to do, the question is, how do we do it in the current environment? So in my written testimony, I highlighted five major areas within the bill, and I tried to be helpful and added where they are actually within the bill, what page and what lines. And I'll briefly discuss those. The first major component is the timeline that the Senate President discussed, a 6-year phase-in. That's starts on page 3, line 22. So that's in OLIS if you'd like to look at those again. The second major piece is I think the question was about the technical changes for 4-day school weeks. When the original legislation or the current law that's in place does not take into account, say, school districts with 4-day weeks, it also doesn't take into account weeks where you have less than full school weeks, or you have outdoor school, or you have field trips, or other days where the students are outside of.
We call that the month of November.
The November, yeah. So Thanksgiving week, things like that. So there's a whole range. Starting on page 1, line 14, there's a whole range of responsibility given to the State Board to essentially prorate minutes for all of those things that we've talked about. School closures, inclement weather, holidays, irregular class schedules, short school weeks, and things like that. So during those weeks, you know, if you have 3 days of school because of snow, you have to cancel 2 days. You don't have to, you're not out of compliance if you didn't do 150 minutes, for example, in your elementary schools that week. So there's allowances for that. The third item, which is on page 2, lines 3 through 13, and this was a new thing that we kind of thought of at the last minute, but as was discussed earlier, PE is the only subject that will have statutorily required minutes, and that's a new thing and a different thing. And so what we needed to do was create language for what I would describe as a safety valve, if not when we have another recession. If the minutes are in statute and the budgets are cut, then local school districts could not cut physical education programs and could potentially have to look at doubling cuts in other places. So we created a safety valve that essentially says that if the school budgets, the state school fund dips below current service level, that the minutes are suspended during those school years where there's a recession. So there's a safety valve there for that as well. The committee talked a little bit about the flexibility for teachers. Let me just give you some specifics on that, and I think Lori can talk about that as well. But generally, both Lori and I, if we are first grade teachers, we can teach PE. Our license allows us to instruct our classrooms, as you know, in PE. But I couldn't take Lori's kids down to the gym and mix them with my kids. We would both have to go. We couldn't mix up cohorts. And so what we've done is allowed for a little bit of flexibility. Up to 45 minutes of the PE minute requirements could be done in those large group activities where you could have some of the teachers doing planning or doing other things while you have some of the teachers instructing the kids in physical education to provide some flexibility. And we appreciate that our colleagues at OEA agreed to look at the licensure changes for that. And then the last thing, and I think perhaps the most important thing from our discussions, I think we accomplished a lot that hadn't happened in 10 years in about 10 months. And we tried to come up with a solution, a new timeline, flexibility, creative ways to get kids moving through brain breaks and other things like that. The one thing that I think we were not able to solve is sort of, what are we going to do with middle school? Middle school is a little bit more difficult because obviously there's more minutes, 225 versus 150. But a lot of our middle schools have block schedules or electives. And the students, when they're taking PE, they may be getting the minutes, but oftentimes they aren't taking PE year-round because they're doing other electives or other classes. And so built into this is continued collaboration. So all the stakeholders that were part of Senate Bill 4 will sit down with the Department of Education and we'll continue our conversations about middle school and look at sort of, and it's very plain in the bill. It's on page 4, lines 21 through 45. It very clearly explains all the things and the parameters for those discussions that we've agreed on. And I think, again, we just... you know, we made a lot of progress in those 9 or 10 months. And I think if we have, you know, until September of next year or November, I can't remember the exact, I believe it's November. I think we have a pretty good shot at coming up with a solution to help finalize the middle school implementation as well. So I'll stop there and allow my colleagues to speak, and we'll certainly be willing to answer questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Lori?
Hi, good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. For your record, Lori Wimmer, representing Oregon Education Association. It's 44,000 members, and we too were members of the work group. And I like to say that I'm the one who had a foot in each camp, because we had PE teachers who were part of the original bill 10 years ago, and both active and retired. And we also have educators in every other aspect of school work and life. And we didn't want to see a situation in which, because of resource scarcity, we were literally pitting teachers and programs against teachers and programs. And so we were trying to figure out a way to thread a very nuanced needle, if you will, to make sure that we had fidelity with the original intent, which is a brain movement connection for students, but did so in a way that didn't super advantage one very important element of an educational opportunity for students against all others, which is what tends to happen in a distorted way when we have resource scarcity, as we do now. So we wanted, and then the licensure piece that Mr. Allen mentioned was another piece that we were able to offer some guidance working with our Center for Teaching, our Great Public School Center, our licensure experts there, on ways to make sure that we weren't substituting, for example, private PE providers or paraprofessionals or otherwise not qualified folks to take care of some of those minutes as a cheap way to address the issue. We wanted to make sure that there was somebody qualified to lead the academic and movement side of physical education for all of the minutes. And we worked with those who have a more comprehensive license that enables them to take on the specialization areas such as music, health, PE, and so on for a smaller cohort of students at for a portion of those minutes, but not to diminish the quality in terms of having unlicensed people handling that. So there was a job, a quality control, job protection, student quality, student health, all of those different pieces and parts coming together, and we feel like we struck a good balance there. The final thing I'd mention is, as you know, the middle school piece is especially challenging, and here's one of the concerns that we had. Because students typically get two electives, I think about our students who are in ELL programs. That takes up one of their electives. If PE is required every single day without lengthening the day or somehow doing something more creative with the schedule, what happens is those students get no electives under a strict construct of the law as it's written now. So what we wanted to do is make sure we preserve for students all of their opportunities, including PE.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Christina Bodemer. I'm the Oregon Government Relations Director for the American Heart Association, and I'm actually here today as the chair of the Physical Education for All Kids Coalition in support of SB4. The Physical Education for All Kids, or PEAK Coalition, is comprised of community-based organizations, advocates, parents, educators, and health professionals who, for the last decade, have been and continue to be deeply committed to improving PE and wellness in Oregon schools. PE not only provides students with an opportunity for physical activity in their school day, it teaches students the basics of physical literacy and how to integrate exercise into their lives to establish a lifetime of healthy living. Children who are more active learn more effectively and achieve more academically, making PE an integral part of developing the whole child for success in social settings and the learning environment. As has been mentioned, when we realized that this deadline was looming and that our schools, having faced the decade that they have with challenges, they were not in a position to be able to implement this as scheduled. We worked diligently to create this new implementation pathway and really kind of create an opportunity to think creatively around how this should be implemented. And we dedicated a lot of time on working that on elementary. And our hope is that by given the same opportunity to do so in middle school, we'll be able to come up with an equally equitable and creative solution to get our children moving in elementary and middle school. You know, I know that there were many challenging concessions made over the last 10 months, as has been kind of alluded to, but I think it's very important to notice that all of our parties remained at the table really dedicated to these discussions and working on a path forward. Our schools hold an evidence-based opportunity to increase physical activity among youth, as children are more likely to get the recommended amount of physical education if they live in states like Oregon with policies that mandate activities. Our expectation now is that with the passage of SB4, Oregon will finally be on a path to providing meaningful standard-based physical education for our elementary and middle school students. I think that one nice framework of this is, even though we've been creative about who can offer physical education, the standards and the quality of physical education will remain consistent no matter how it's provided in our schools. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Do you have any questions? Representative Solman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you tell me, there's several schools I know within Hillsborough that have like Right Brain Initiative, and they do a lot of, you know, sometimes dance movement and different things like that. Now, could something like that, with the teacher that is there, because the teacher's always in the classroom, could something like that count towards minutes when it's not conducted by the teacher herself, but she's...
Yeah, Chair Doherty and Representative Solman, I think the most important thing, and Christina just mentioned it, that we built flexibility for who can provide the instruction. But as long as the activity meets the PE standards, you can get very creative. You know, some other things we've, you know, there's all, Medford is another school district that has done some very creative things. But that's the key. As long as it meets the PE standards. So the example earlier was given, well, you know, just let's just take out the kids out for a walk around the track. That probably would not meet the PE standards. But there are ways in the standards to incorporate those types of things, school-wide activity type things where you could meet the PE standards and count those minutes to that. Or think the brain breaks, you know, 5 minutes of yoga or stretching in the classroom or things like that. like that would count towards the minutes. We think that there's sufficient flexibility in the PE standards that people can be creative about how to make sure those minutes count.
Can Chair Doherty, Representative Solomon, if I may, the one nice thing that PE Coalition is actually now focusing our efforts on is trying to do our due diligence of making it as easy as possible for schools to find resources that are meeting state standards, so that doesn't fall on one individual in a school, that there is, in essence, a toolkit created to really help. Here's a resource, here are the standards that it meets, and this is kind of an easy way for them to implement, that it doesn't become too burdensome for one individual.
And Madam Chair, Representative Solomon, one of our PE teachers who was part of the original law came up with the idea of the toolkit, so that wasn't up to each PE specialist in each school to invent, you know, reinvent the wheel, so that that would be available, so that it, as the grab-and-go kind of programming.
Evans. Thank you, Chair, and I want to appreciate to everybody appreciate the work to get it here, but I just heard something, and I want to make sure Mr. Allen didn't misspeak, so I'm going to give him a chance to fix it. Yoga is not going to be part of the required. In my district, that could get somebody shot. So it's going to be appropriate to the classroom activities, correct?
Sure.
No mandated of yoga?
Yeah, Chair Doherty, Representative Evans. As someone who may have received a less than passing grade in seventh grade aerobics at Calpulville School in Albany, Oregon.
I want the middle school kids to do yoga and get calm.
So but those are just examples of the types of things that you could do.
That you could, but not required.
Not required, no. There are plenty of things that meet the standards.
All right.
Representative McClain.
So I guess what I wanted to know was, it looked like from the beginning that this bill was on minutes, and so where do the PE standards fit in as far as elementary and middle school? Right.
So Chair Doherty and Representative McClain, and I'm certainly not an expert on the standards, but essentially the standards exist. They've actually been recently updated, I think within the last year or so. And so those are age appropriate, grade appropriate, grade level appropriate standards for physical education. The law requires that at least 50% of the minutes be actual, I'm not getting the terminology right, but rigorous physical movement. But after that, the standards are set, and then each individual school district or each individual classroom teacher can decide what activities or curriculum. It's not a curricular mandate or specific sports or other things like that. It's really up to the local folks.
So, and the other question from your conversation about kits. So are these kits going to be, is the Department of Ed now into PE kits? Is that who's going to be making them?
Madam Chair, Representative McClain, the PE organization SHAPE has been considered one of the leading players in that these are PE educators and their professional association. The department would be in charge of disseminating that to any party who wants it, but we're hoping that the PE experts themselves are the ones who work with the standards to create it, and the standards do come through the department.
So, Chair Doherty, I just want to say that, and I'm sure you guys are involved and want to be part of the kits too, but it's just that we've been so careful, and I mean, it looks like a kumbaya moment, so, you know, I'll be voting yes, but it's a situation where we've been not sending anything down unless we really thought about who's paying for what.
Who's paying for it, yeah.
And so it just, you know, it just kind of overwhelmed me today to hear now about kits and, you know, other ideas and things about how we're going to be getting, you know, these teachers. I just keep thinking about all these elementary school teachers that are all of a sudden now have to deal with movement in the classroom in between other curriculum units. And it sounds like it's going to work, but I just think we need to have our eyes wide open that we're asking for more. There is a possibility that somewhere along the line somebody's paying for something, and that if we really want this to be pulled off, that there have to be resources and there have to be, you know, folks that are supported. So I think we need to be realistic.
Yeah. Chair Doherty, Representative McClain. So The word toolkit may be slightly misleading. What we're looking at is actually looking at existing resources that are either free. There are an amazing amount of free resources available online for physical education. What that free resource does not do is automatically align it with a school standard. So what that toolkit is more, it's not a tangible like box of balls and items. Mm-hmm. It's more along the lines of here's an activity that you already may be doing in your school, such as Go Noodle, which is an online physical activity break that takes that individual item that's already existing in open source and ties it to a specific standard so they know that it's standards-based, not so much having an expectation. We know that each individual school district has different abilities to pay and buy new resources, so some of the items that are listed in that resource, maybe if you have money, this is a fantastic and standards-based kit. If there is no money, here are some other ideas. So not a mandate of any kind of actual box of activities or tangible items, but trying to make it easier for people to identify the free resources that are standards-based.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I was curious. I was curious because, like, Mrs. Jones at Quitama Elementary does this amazing song and dance regarding the respiratory system, or I spoke of Ms. Rooks at Free Orchards. So is there a resource? Teachers be able to go to their PE teacher and say, hey, how can we incorporate this? And would that be their resource within a classroom? Because I know so many of these teachers already get their kids up and want
to. Madam Chair, Representative Solomon, that's why we wanted to make sure that the PE specialist at a school was still reviewing how that was going to go forward in terms of working with our colleagues. But we also didn't want all the burden to be on that PE specialist, so we have this extra step added so that the PE teachers' organizations could help make sure that those resources were clear and easy to follow. It's probably just an adaptation of what they're already doing.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
I have a couple of questions. First of all, does recess count as part of the required time?
Chair Doherty, it could if the activities were done by licensed teachers and they met the PE standards. So, for example, just going out and have everyone playing and doing their own thing and some kids on the swings and some kids playing volleyball or whatever, if you did an organized activity, a structured activity, we got some examples during our work group process from Medford where they do sort of school-wide or class-wide types of activities at recess. If they meet the PE standards, those minutes could do that. They could count towards that,
the
but they
I
don't
said that
automatically count.
If you go out on recess, the kids are moving all the time. Sometimes you go to the PE class, and the kids are standing around.
Right.
And so this is where, you know, I don't know if that was taken into consideration, but I think it's something that should. The second thing, I am picturing the combination of classes, and so somebody has time to plan and so on, but I'm also picturing 60 first graders with one teacher. And so I think there needs to be very serious consideration as to, one, the staffing for that, two, making sure that you have a certain ratio of whether it's also instructional assistance or so on or something like this, because it's a real safety factor. Okay, picture your first grader and multiply it by 60. And that's the sort of thing that the teachers are facing. The third thing, these are all just suggestions. The third thing is when you're talking about planning, you know, it's fine to have fine resources, but the teachers are going to have to go through and plan and do the planning time for this. And so I'm very, very stuck on the thing of what are you going to take away? And I think in the years that we're coming up is doing this because, you know, we talked about this in committee. If this was brought to us in a committee, and then my other question is going to be, what is the funding factor when if you have no PE specialist in your building and you have to have a PE specialist, who's going to pay for it? And so all of these sort of things, if this was brought earlier and these were not answered, this bill would not go forward because this House committee is not putting forth unfunded mandates. And so I'm just concerned with those kind of things and how do you plan to address them? Because
so, Chair Doherty, I
can see in another 2 years that you guys are going to be right back here.
Chair Doherty, I think every single point you made was probably discussed many times, if not at least once or twice, during the course of the 10 months that we talked about this. And I think the reality is that that is why within the bill, particularly around the middle school, we're going to have continuing conversations, and that's the last part to phase in because we believe
The primary difference between the elementary and middle school may on the surface look like the minutes, the 150 versus 225, but when you really start getting down into the nitty-gritty and implementation, if you have a elementary endorsement that allows you to teach PE, and a lot of our school districts, the classroom teachers do some of the PE, they have some specialists, or some districts, they may just have specialists. But there's more ability to get creative and flexible with the staff and time you have at elementary, not so much, as you point out, at middle school, where you would have to, if you don't have sufficient PE specialists to implement 225 minutes a week, you would have to hire a PE specialist to do that. And I think the short answer to your question is we don't have the definitive answers to many of those questions that you just posed. We feel like we've gotten to a good place in elementary, but we know that we probably still have some work to do on middle school, and everyone is committed to doing that.
Because this is going to be on the backs of the teachers. There's just absolutely no, in the elementary level, no getting around it.
Madam Chair.
And I know that when we cut, in 2003, when we cut literally almost every PE teacher in Hillsboro, and there were some things that they went through and did. Actually, the teachers would have rather have taught music than PE. So,
I was just going to acknowledge everything you just said, and those were some of the issues that we brought into the room, of course, when we participated in the work group. And one of the realities that hit me in the face with respect to trying to struggle to find something that was not maybe perfect, but much better than it could have been, is that without this bill, the law would come, would be coming into force right away. And as Representative Selman said, 90% of our school districts would be in danger of not getting any state school fund resource. And to top it all off, right now we have PE classes with 100 kids in them in some of our school districts. It's a little known fact. Mm-hmm. That is the current status. We're actually trying to make it safer for those kids and back it down a bit and take the pressure off. This is not perfect, but it is much better than the current law, and without this bill, the current law stands.
Well, unless the current law would be repealed during this session. But I think whether it's an amendment or whether we go through and do this before it's implemented, they need to look at the idea of having PE recess included in this. Mm-hmm. Because, and the idea of PE standards and so on, are they standards that can be met? There's so many questions out here, and every bit of it, 100% of this is going to fall directly on the classroom teacher, and the principal is going to be paying for it too. So I just have that caution with all of this, that it could turn into something that is a tremendous burden on the elementary teacher.
And Chair Doherty, just as a reminder too, and I hope I made this clear earlier, by November 15th of next year, the department and the stakeholders will be coming back to the legislature with an update on our continuing conversations.
Thank you.
That's built. We baked that into the bill just for the reason you.
Yeah, and I appreciate where you came from, where we started. So anyway, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Those are the only ones we had signed up for Senate Bill 4. Anybody else want to speak on it? Okay, with that, we close the public hearing on Senate Bill 4, and we open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1003A. And so we have Morgan Allen, don't get comfortable, Jared Mason Gear, and Amanda Krause. And if you want to get back to us what the bill is, please.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1003 requires school districts ensure that at least one teacher in kindergarten through grade 5 at each school receives training related to dyslexia. It requires the Department of Education develop a list of training opportunities related to dyslexia. And it requires school districts ensure that every kindergarten or first grader is screened for risk factors of dyslexia. There is a revenue impact statement, and no revenue impact, and a fiscal impact statement has been issued with the fiscal. There is a dash to amendment for this version, which changes the operative date of Section 1 to July 1st, 2018.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, I am Amanda Krause, staff to State Senator Kathleen Taylor, who represents Senate District 21. She's currently chairing the Senate Committee on Workforce, where they're getting through a variety of work sessions today. So she asked that I come over on her behalf.
Thank you.
To share with you all her support for Senate Bill 1003A and the Dash 82 amendment that's before you. As background, in 2015, Senator Taylor worked with Senator Roblin and Representative Val Hoyle to champion Senate Bill 612, which aimed to address the specific needs of students with dyslexia in our schools. And this bill today is a follow-up to that work to address the implementation of the screening process for dyslexic students. Senator Roblin and Senator Taylor worked with advocates who are in the room, as well as the experts who are up here today, to come together on an amendment that was drafted in the Senate Committee on Education, and the amendment that's before you today as well. Senator Taylor strongly supports this bill, as well as the work of the advocates with decoding dyslexia who are here in the room, and many of whom happen to be constituents of Senate District 21. I'll leave the specifics for the need to the current amendment to the experts, and I really appreciate you allowing me to speak here today a little quickly and shakily. So I appreciate your welcoming faces, and thank you so much, Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Doherty. Morgan Allen here on behalf of the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, and I've submitted written testimony that goes into detail on this, but as Ms. Krause said, Senate Bill 612 passed in 2015. It did four major things. The first thing, it required that we have one teacher in all of our elementary schools to receive training on how to work and recognize dyslexia among students, work with those students. It authorized funding from the current network for quality teaching and learning to be spent to pay for those teacher training. So an important aspect, I know particularly for this committee, if we're going to require a training, we're going to pay for it, and we have a funding source to do that. It created and funded a dyslexia specialist at the Department of Education, and I think we've all benefited from having her on board to help guide the work at the state level. And then it required the department to create a plan to ensure that all kindergartners and any first graders who missed in kindergarten receive screening for risk factors for reading difficulties, including dyslexia. The current Senate bill specifically addresses the fourth area, which is around student screening, and it's really an attempt to kind of refine the implementation process. And the current bill does three things. It clarifies, number one, it clarifies that the universal screening for risk factors for dyslexia is to be administered to all kindergartners. And then any first graders that happen to miss while they were in kindergarten or move into the state or started later, they didn't attend kindergarten for whatever reason. The second thing is it clarifies that screening will include communications with the family if there's anything that presents on the screenings, but only if it presents on the screenings. The original bill would have required our teachers and school districts to engage in some uncomfortable conversations with families where the student has no – it would have required basically schools to ask every incoming kindergartner family if anyone in their immediate family has difficulty reading, and that's not appropriate unless there's actually a reason or a factor that would indicate whether those questions or those discussions need to happen. So this bill clarifies that. And then it directs ODE to provide further guidance on best practices for student-level interventions and other types of screenings. So those recommendations we've baked in another report back to the legislature in September of 2018. And then, as was mentioned earlier, we have a new -A2 amendment that basically – well, that does one thing. It looks really complicated, but it only does one thing. It's very short. The current – when Senate Bill 612 passed, it required that those – K or those elementary school teachers would need to be trained by January 1st, 2018. And the screenings go into effect in the 2018-19 school year. So we wanted to get the teachers trained before the screenings start happening. The screenings are coming along maybe a little more slowly than we expected, and they're not available to districts, and we're concerned we're going to start running up against that deadline. So this amendment extends that teacher training deadline from January 1st, 2018 to July 1st, 2018 to give school districts more opportunities and more time to get the staff trained. And then the last thing I would say, too, we're certainly talking to the co-chairs, the big co-chairs of Ways and Means, the Ways and Means Education Subcommittee chairs. We want to make sure that this legislature appropriates and sets aside the money for school districts to provide those trainings to teachers and the associated costs. It was in Senate Bill 612 when it passed last session. It's in Senate Bill 182, which is hasn't come to your side, but is another education bill down in Ways and Means. And so certainly we would welcome any of your advocacy to make sure that those funds are set aside
to pay for those teacher trainings and the associated costs. They are authorized in statute, but it will take in the budget process. The legislature will have to make that part of the department's grant and aid budget and make that reimbursable, similar to what you did with lead testing. You set aside a pot of money and allowed districts to come and get reimbursed for the cost of tests for lead. A similar thing is what we're hoping for. Okay. That's not part of this bill, but I'll just put that on the record. That's another thing we're working on as well.
It's specifically to that testing issue.
Can we just wait till the whole panel finishes? Go ahead, Mr. Masongear.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, Jared Masongear, representing the Oregon Education Association and our 44,000 members around the state, testifying as well in support of SB 1003 with the A2 amendments. We are very pleased to be part of the process in crafting House Bill 2412 and Senate Bill 612 in the 2015 session. As you would guess, our members are more committed than anyone than ensuring that students have the tools they need to be successful in school, and of course, many of our members are parents themselves of students that are struggling with dyslexia. What we did find is that as the bills are being implemented, that there are these issues that both Amanda and Mr. Allen have discussed that put our members in a pretty difficult spot, both as far as the challenges with workload that they already experience, and the overemphasis on screenings, and then putting them in pretty difficult conversations with a variety of parents. And so we think that we've reached a more manageable position with 1003, and then of course the amendment is going to be important in ensuring that we have adequate time to properly implement the bill and ensure that the trainings are online. So we encourage your support and would ask you to both add the A2 amendment and then support 1003 with as amended.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Questions? Representative McLean.
In 2015, when we passed the other dyslexia bill and there was some issue in rulemaking about, you know, what we were asking the teachers to do after these folks have been tested, we got into a debate over different types of reading courses, and the International Dyslexia Society being one of the, you know, the one that they wanted them to use. And I noticed that there's different types of tests, including the International Dyslexia Group again has a test. Does it say anything, or is it silent to what dyslexia tests these folks are going to be using in screening?
Yeah, so Chair Doherty and Representative McLean, I think there's two answers to your questions. The first, and I learned this over the course of the time, is that there is no screening that diagnoses dyslexia. As you know from your time teaching, you know, sort of flags reading difficulties, and then it takes the intervention of professional educators, teachers, reading specialists, and other folks to work closer with the student. So right now, as far as the trainings go, the teacher training, that is being, there are RFIs or RFPs that are out from the Department of Education right now, and they have had some respondents. That's part of the reason we're here today, to extend that deadline. We're a little concerned that it's a little more intensive, time intensive than we may have thought originally, so we tried to address that in the bill. As far as the actual screening tools that the school districts were used, my understanding, again speaking with the ODA Department of Education dyslexia specialists, is a lot of things like response to intervention, and I'm not familiar with all the tools, but I believe things like response to intervention, DIBL, some of the other things that a lot of districts are already implemented will be sufficient screening tools to meet the requirements. So there are tools in existence that many districts are using right now. And my understanding, I do not believe the department is developing a universal screening tool that every school district will have to use. They're giving guidance on what would meet the requirements, and many things in use currently do.
Can I just follow up? Mm-hmm. In my understanding, you know, from my personal experience, and just from what I've read on it, too, is that there's 144 different types of dyslexia issues. And so it seems really important to make sure that we're using a full scope.
Right.
And so I'm glad to hear that that's the case.
Well, and the other important thing, too, that I think was part of your question is the original plan and rulemaking was, I think, a little bit top-down and prescriptive from the state level. This puts it back in the hands of the local educators and local school district staff to decide when a student flags and what are the next steps, what are the interventions. It also includes language where we want the dyslexia specialists at the Department of Ed and the dyslexia stakeholders and school stakeholders to continue that discussion and are required to bring back recommendations next September.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Okay, I have a few. Last time when we dealt with this, the universities are the ones that are the most concerned because they were the ones that were responsible for the training. Is that still an issue? I've not heard from any of them on this bill yet. But
Chair,
I mean,
Doherty,
they were talking to like these teachers would have to take another like 9 months of training and all of this kind of thing.
Chair Doherty, my understanding is that is a separate issue from what we were talking about, and the other bill on your agenda today deals with that.
Okay, thank you. And then also, last time we dealt with this, I can't remember who came in, but remember we had that presentation about something they use, I don't know if in Denmark or Sweden, or where literally is a 3-minute computer diagnosis of dyslexia. Have you guys looked at that?
Because yeah, so
it was thinking about when kindergartners come in and what they do to test all the kinders, and I know in Tiger Tualatin, literally the kindergarten kids are not in school the first week. Because every kindergarten teacher meets with every parent and every child and does all of that.
Yeah.
And so I was just wondering.
Yeah, Chair Doherty and members of the committee, and I imagine he might be listening right now, that's Mr. Robin Batson with a company called Optalexia, which is out of Sweden.
Yeah.
And I believe they're changing the name, and I can't remember it right now. But I was put in contact with him, and then that's kind of how he ended up here earlier this session. They have implemented a pilot testing program, I believe, in the Oregon City School District, and they're working with that district. Again, I think it holds, I'm certainly not an expert on this, but that technology appears to hold promise, and I think people are evaluating it and waiting to get some figures back. And I certainly think, I know that Mr. Batson has reached out to some of the decoding dyslexia folks, and I think there is some interest, but I think the hope would be that there may be some tools developed in the future that could do the screenings quickly and accurately. I think the science is not there 100%. It's still, you know, sort of in the proving ground stage and piloting and do things. But as you heard from the presentation earlier this year, it clearly holds promise. Mm-hmm. There's clearly excitement for it. And as a layperson, to me, it seemed like it could potentially be a tool that could do this quickly and effectively.
Right. Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, those are the only ones signed up for House Bill or Senate Bill through 1003. Anybody else want to speak on it? Okay, with that, I close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1003 and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 221. Okay.
Yes. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, Senate Bill 221 requires teacher training programs to provide instruction on other reading difficulties as well as dyslexia, requires educator preparation programs for early childhood education, elementary education, special education, or reading to provide instruction on dyslexia and other reading difficulties. And it prohibits the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission from denying approval of an education preparation program for failure to comply with standards or rules adopted under ORS 342-147 if the program submits its plan to comply with the Commission rules and submits its plan within 1 year of adopting the standards. And it allows the education preparation programs to phase in compliance with standards or rules adopted by the Commission over 3 years, declares emergency effective on passage. Revenue impact statement has no revenue impact, and a fiscal impact statement has been issued as minimal impact.
Okay, why don't we start out with Dr. Monica Bean and Trent Donbowski.
Chair Doherty, co-chair, or Vice Chair Hernandez, Vice Chair Wilson, members of the committee. For the record, I am Dr. Monica Bean, NBCT, and the Executive Director of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. And with me is Trent Donowski, the Deputy Director as well. The reason we are before you today is to let you know about the portion of the bill that other people will not be testifying about, and that is the provision, and I did see some perplexed looks on faces when the description was listed. The authority that TSPC has for program approval, the commission's approval of a program to operate to basically prepare and license or recommend for licensure an educator. The other portion of this section of the law required, if you recall from the, I think, the 15 session, that requires educator prep programs to be nationally accredited. So that's in this section of the law, you're focusing on the dyslexia portions of it, what's required for dyslexia preparation and instruction, but it's important that you realize that it's also impacting the delayment of by 3 years for educator prep programs to be nationally accredited. So it really gives the educator preparation programs time to meet the standard four specifically, which requires them to have that data that we just don't have available to the educator prep programs at this current time. So that phase in of the 3 years is applicable to that. So I just wanted to make sure that you also had that information before you. And we are neither for nor against the bill as the agency director.
Okay, any questions? Representative McLean.
Well, I appreciate you making that comment on record because, Pacific University and other education preparation, you know, folks, I think they were really very concerned, and as the chair already pointed out, and I think that they were very happy with the conversation around the rules and also the extension to be able to work on, as you point out, this issue as well as others for national certification. And I think that looks like it's a good compromise to make sure that everyone's prepared to do that work.
Because I know it was specific to elementary, special ed, dyslexia, what else was there? Reading. And so that those are the sort of license or program areas we're talking about.
Chair Doherty, that is correct. So that portion of the bill, what the original bill, before it was amended, said that it took away the reference to the International Dyslexia Association standards because it was very specific to name those standards.
Right.
And so the original bill eliminated that language, but then the amendment brought that language back in for the purpose and clarifying that those standards, those International Dyslexia Association, IDA standards, are only to be used for the preparation for dyslexia instruction, not all reading instruction. So it clarifies that for programs that not all reading preparation must be based on those standards. There are other reading standards and literacy standards, and that just provides that clarification.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Okay. Do you have something to add?
Okay. I have no plan statement. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, the next thing we have is Cindy Roberts and Aaron Prince.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert. I work for the Oregon Alliance of Independent Colleges and Universities. That's 18 private nonprofit schools in Oregon, like the one across the street, teaching 35,000 students. So this is a little bit interesting for us because this bill is actually about teacher prep programs. So it's in the higher ed, what are we teaching our future teachers today? And in the only section we're here to talk about is Section 3 of Senate Bill 221, which has to do with the CAPE accreditation. And that's what Dr. Bean just talked to you about as well. So I'm going to be really brief because you've already heard it, but I wanted to give you just a little bit of background. In 2015, Chalkboard Project came in and passed Senate Bill 78 with some other folks, but they were the real impetus behind it. And it made it so that the state educator prep programs had to meet a national standard as enacted and decided upon by TSPC. That was great. Everyone agreed to it. We moved on. What happened, as you've just heard, is some of the schools said, wait a minute, we don't have the information we need. So here I am working for both Chalkboard Project as a strategic person and then for all the educator prep programs in the private schools, and they're not agreeing. So as you know, this is every lobbyist nightmare, this kind of conflict. But when we came down to it, we sat at the table, we decided what we need is an extension. Chalkboard said, yes, we are really firm about a need for quality standards. As long as that happens in good time, you know, in a good amount of time, we're okay with that. And the institution said, as long as we have the time and can work with TSPC to get the data we need, we're working on the longitudinal data system, as you know, as long as we're working towards that and you move it out a little bit so we have all the information we need, then we're on the same page. So this bill is those two groups mm-hmm. on the same page. The public, private, ed, higher, educator prep programs also agree with it. So we're all on the same page on Section 3 of Senate Bill 221. So I appreciate your time.
Nice
great.
To hear.
Thank you. Madam Chair, And members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dr. Erin Prince. I'm the Vice President of Education Policy for the Chalkboard Project. And Cindy gave you some background. I'm here also to let you know that following a chalkboard survey that was conducted through the Teach Oregon Initiative across the state, an audit and report by the Secretary of State's office was also filed in August of 2013. Both found that over half the administrators felt teachers were not sufficiently prepared, and teachers themselves did not feel fully prepared for the classroom once graduating from the prep programs. It was also evident that other states were further ahead of Oregon in the collection of valuable data that followed hiring and retention rates, the success of teachers entering their first few years of teaching, and the development of strong collaborative partnerships between K-12 and education prep programs. Based on my 32 years plus in education, public education, most recently as a superintendent in the Corvallis School District, I appreciate fully the impact of the national accreditation that it can and will have on Oregon education prep programs. Basically, recognizing that high level of rigor and the collection of extensive data while systems are still needing to be developed, and making program shifts, we at Chalkboard fully support the extension of the timeline through Senate Bill 221 for the university education prep programs to successfully meet the national standards of accreditation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of the panel? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks.
Okay, those were the only four that we had signed up for this. Anybody else want to speak on Senate Bill 1003? Okay, with not that, we close the public hearing on House Bill 1003A, and we are adjourned. And